I like going to church, and I like hearing somebody preach a sermon and teach me from God's Word. I like reading the Bible. I like reading Christian books. I like listening to worship music and to Christian music. But you know what I love? I love singing. And I hope you do too. I hope you love what we just got to do. And I want to give you a warning and prepare your mind and for what's ahead. We're going to sing again. After I talk to you for a little bit, we're going to sing again. And here's why I love singing is it forces me not just to hear things, but to say things and to declare and to really claim the truth that we proclaim through those songs. And it allows me to hear a multitude of people reminding me of encouraging me with that truth and to be a part of the chorus that is reminding everyone else and encouraging everyone else with the truth contained in those songs. We try our best to only sing songs that are true and that are according to God's word. And so we're going to sing one more at the end. I want to prepare you for that. If we haven't met, I know there's some people that are here for the first time tonight, and I'm so glad you're here. My name's David Pinyol, and I direct the high school ministry here at Watermark. And we're starting, if you're here for the first time, you're here at a great time because we're starting a new teaching series where the next 3 weeks we're going to teach kind of in-depth on the same topic. And you can see on the screen, it's called margins. If you have a piece of paper, you're working on a Word document, your margins are the parts around the edge, on the outside. And we're going to be talking about the people on the margins or in the margins of society, on the outside of your normal social interactive circles, people that are on the outside. Specifically, we're going to talk about orphans. We're going to talk about people that are in slavery, and then we're going to talk about social outcasts and rejects right in the middle of your life. Now, the last one, I think you go, that's applicable, and I'm probably going to be convicted, and I'm going to need to hear something about that. The other two, if I'm sitting where you're sitting, I'm wondering, what does that have to do with me, a Dallas high schooler? And hopefully tonight, we're going to help you see that it has a lot to do with you, and there's a reason why we're teaching it to you, and we hope that you're going to be encouraged. But that's why we're calling this series Margins, is because we're talking about you and the people that are on the margins of society. So as we start off, I don't really want to brag, but I feel like I'm going to have to start off bragging. I'm married, guys. Yes. Pretty cool. And when you get married, you have to ask, if you're a guy, you have to ask a female to marry you, which can be an intimidating proposition. So what you do is you spend way more money than you should. Cooper's taking vigorous notes back there. He's like, what was that? You have to spend more money than you think you should to buy a diamond ring. And I spent thousands of dollars buying my wife a diamond ring, my girlfriend at the time. And then I made her my fiance. And then I spent hundreds more dollars getting her a wedding. That's the trick. You get the engagement ring, it's not enough. You've got to get a wedding band that you give her in the ceremony. And if you have a wife like mine who likes nice things, the wedding band also has to have little tiny diamonds in that. And you're going, what am I? What am I, a king? I'm not. I'm David. And I already spent thousands of dollars on the engagement ring. But no matter how many thousands I spent on the engagement ring, which I don't want to, you know, brag, but it was more than one, it was not as much as Bernie. This is a guy's real name, Bernie Squidieri. Hello, Mr. Squidieri. What's your first name? Bernie. Why do your parents hate you? Bernie on his engagement ring and wedding band for his wife, Carla. Thank you for the normal name, Carla. Bernie spent $240,000 on the engagement ring and the wedding band. And so here's what I want to do is I came across this story in the news, and this is going to set up where we're going tonight, talking again what I said about people on the margins, specifically tonight, orphans. I want you to pay attention to this news story. I promise you it's going to help us where we're going. Carla Squidieri's wedding ring and band are worth a combined total of $240,000. Yet, they were priceless to the Squidieri's. The rings, actually one was an anniversary band, the other, the wedding ring, were heirloom pieces that Carlos Guidieri planned to pass on to their 13-year-old daughter. The wedding ring had a 12.5-carat diamond. We have a picture of it right here on the top. While the anniversary band had 7.5 carats worth of diamonds all the way around. Now, here's why this is in the news. Because there's more expensive rings than this. All right, they're not writing a story because it's the biggest diamond ever. They're writing a story because of what happened next. Bernie Squidieri says that his wife called his office late one Monday morning to tell him that she could not find the rings. Bernie rushed home from the office to help her look for the rings. But when they could not find them, they realized what had happened. Carla had placed the rings in a paper towel next to the sink while she was doing the dishes. And they must have accidentally got thrown into the trash. And the garbage truck had picked up the trash earlier that same morning. And when Bernie called the trash company, they told him there was nothing they could do. Because by the time he called them, the truck was in line to drop off the trash to the incinerator. And the location in the dump where the truck was classified as a radioactive site, and no people could enter it. So even if they were willing to go look for it, they couldn't. It was discarded. It was lost. It was gone. $240,000. Because, now here's the point in the story. Because they didn't treat it, Carla didn't treat it like it was worth. She put it in a paper towel. And she disguised it. She didn't carefully set it apart and make sure this is set in a safe place and it's clear what it is. It's labeled. She didn't set it apart. It was just amongst everything else. And it got swept into the trash with everything else because it wasn't treated like its value. So here's the point. If something valuable is not clearly set apart, it will be treated as worthless. If something valuable is not clearly set apart, it will be treated as worthless. So here's the setup for this whole series, and it's going to guide us into this evening. If Christians are not clearly set apart, we, if you call yourself a Christian, we will be treated as worthless by the rest of the world. If our lives are not clearly set apart and distinguished, we will be treated as worthless by the rest of the world. I'm going to give you a quote and show you two places in Scripture where this comes from, and then we're going to move into this great message tonight. 1 Peter 1:15-16, this is just illustrating this main point overriding this series, says this: "Now you must be holy." The word holy simply means set apart, distinguished, separated, treated differently, like the rings should have been treated. "You must be holy in everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy. The scriptures say you must be holy because I am holy." That's in the New Testament, a letter written by Peter, who was one of Jesus's disciples, who was a coward and denied Jesus when he was arrested and crucified. But because he saw the resurrected Jesus, preached the truth of salvation boldly. And he says, "Those of you that have come to receive the salvation from Jesus Christ, you should be set apart. You should be different." And this comes from the Old Testament. It's an idea that God gave in the law in Leviticus chapter 11, which says this. Leviticus 11 says, "For I, the Lord, am the one who brought you up from the land of Egypt. You were once worthless, slaves in Egypt, but I brought you out to be your God. I separated you. I set you apart from the Egyptians. I set you apart from every nation on the face of the earth. Therefore, you must be holy." You must be set apart. You must live and continue to live set apart and distinguished because I am holy. And so I saved a quote like 4 years ago from Twitter. Here's a screenshot of Tim Keller. He's a pastor up in New York City. And he made this quote. And this is the quote that inspired this whole series. He says this: "If the church does not identify with the marginalized, those on the outsides of society, if you don't identify with them as a Christian, the church itself will be marginalized, will be treated as worthless." So if you are not holy, if you don't set yourself apart by taking care of people on the outside of society in a unique way that no one else ever does, then you yourself will be pushed to the outside of society. You'll be treated as worthless if you don't distinguish yourself. That's God's poetic justice. So Here's the sermon in a sentence for tonight. If you're taking notes, make sure you get this. And then we're going to charge into the main passage of scripture tonight. Christians should be set apart from the world by the way they treat orphans like family. Christians should be set apart from the rest of the world by the way they treat orphans like family. So here's what we're doing tonight. I'm telling you where we're going. I already told you we're singing a song at the end, so get ready. We're going to look at one more Old Testament passage, and we're really going to think about it. And then I'm going to make three observations from that passage with challenging questions for you to wrestle with, for you to look in the mirror of your own life and to evaluate whether or not you're this kind of Christian that is set apart from the world by the way you treat orphans. All right, so if you have your Bible, open it up, Deuteronomy, all right? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the fifth book of the Bible, chapter 24. And let me just set up where we are in Deuteronomy chapter 24. God has given the law, and now he's giving miscellaneous regulations to the nation of Israel for the purpose that he stated in Leviticus. He wants them to live lives that are set apart and marginalized intentionally from the rest of the world so that the world doesn't throw them away. He goes, I'm going to set you apart. I want you to be holy. I want you to be different. And so I'm going to give you all of these regulations for how you can live. And if you live this way, you're going to be blessed and have an abundance and a peace and a growth like no other nation has ever had. And people are going to look at you and go, what are you all about? And you're going to point them to me. That's God's intention for them. That's God's intention for us. And so as he's giving them these miscellaneous regulations, we find this little section of six verses in Deuteronomy 24. And I'm going to read it. I'm going to give you these three observations and challenging questions, and then we're going to sing. All right, here we go. Deuteronomy 24, 17 through 22. True justice must be given to foreigners living among you and to orphans, and you must never accept a widow's garment as security for her debt. Now, there's a lot in here. We're going to focus on the orphans part tonight. Here's why he says that you should be concerned about giving justice to foreigners, orphans, and widows. Verse 18, always remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God has redeemed you from slavery. That's why I'm giving you this command. So here's why God's giving you this command. I've done something for you when you were thrown away and treated as worthless and in the trash heap of Egypt as a slave. I rescued you. I brought you out. I gave you victory. I gave you a land flowing with milk and honey. I provided it for you. I'm taking care of you. I'm protecting you from your enemies. And so other people who you see are being mistreated and pushed out to the margins of society, you should pull them into your family as well, because I did it for you. So then he goes on to say in verse 19, when you're harvesting your crops, he gives them specifics on how to do this. When you're harvesting your crops and you forget to bring in a bundle of grain from your field, so you've cut down all the grain, you've gone out, you've bundled it up, it's the end of the day, you're bringing it all in, and you remember, oh man, I think I left a big bundle over there. He says, leave it. Leave it out there. And let foreigners, orphans, and widows, people who are poor, who don't have the ability to have their own estate, you leave it for them. And then the Lord your God will bless you because you're acting like God by providing for them and caring for them. And he gives them another example. When you beat the olives from your olive trees, don't go over the boughs twice. Leave the remaining olives for the foreigners, orphans, and widows. Then he gives them a third example in verse 21. When you gather the grapes in your vineyard, don't glean the vines after they're picked. Leave some remaining grapes for the foreigners, orphans, and widows. So what he's telling them is, I've given you an abundance. I've taken care of you. I provided for you. You take care of and provide for them. And then he says the same thing he said in verse 18 again in verse 22. He tells them why. Remember, you were slaves in the land of Egypt. And listen, look at what I've done for you. That's why I'm giving you this command. Guys, the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Leviticus, these are not random throwaway laws that don't apply to us anymore. This applies to you today. This applies to you at age 15, 16, 17, 18. And I'm going to show you how right now. The first thing I observed here, and I want to ask you is this, and I want you to ask yourself. I'm going to frame it in a way that you can ask yourself. When I read this passage, here's what I see. I see that God sees orphans. And I want you to ask yourself the question, do I? God sees orphans. Do I? Like in this passage, it's clear that God knows that there's foreigners, there's orphans, there's widows living among his people. He notices them. Did you know you have orphans living among you? Did you know that there's orphans in this room? Let me explain. I'm going to define orphan, and I'm going to give you some statistics. Here's our definition of orphan that we're going to work off of tonight. An orphan is any child under 18 years of age who has lost one or both parents to death or abandonment. And there's terms that people use to describe orphans, or when they're counting them, there's a single orphan. That's someone that's lost one parent. One of their parents has died. How many of you know someone who's had a parent that has died? If you do, yeah, almost everybody's hands go up. You know an orphan. A double orphan is someone who both their parents have died. Okay? And then a social orphan is someone whose parents may or may not be alive, but they have abandoned them. And I would say there's single social orphans and double social orphans. You heard a story from Sasha. I don't know that we know that were your parents dead or they just abandoned you. They abandoned her. She was a double social orphan, okay? Some of you know people whose parents are divorced and one of the parents has moved out of state. They haven't heard from them in months or maybe even years. That would be a single social orphan. But that is the definition of orphan. Now, let's talk about how much are around us. It's estimated that there are 140 million children worldwide that are orphans due to death of a parent. So that's single or double orphans due to death. 140 million of them worldwide. 140 million worldwide. I don't have this on the screen, but did you know that there's estimated 2.3 billion Christians worldwide? How is that possible that there's 2.3 billion Christians and yet we've allowed there to be 140 million orphans? Let's bring it closer to home and talk about the United States. In the United States of America right now, there's roughly 400,000 children in the U.S. foster care system. 400,000. And of that number, approximately 102,000 are waiting to be adopted. Here's what that means, is those other 300,000, those are people whose parents are still alive and maybe they're in jail or they're unfit as parents temporarily and they're hoping to be in foster care for a time but then to go back in with their parents. But there's 102,000 that don't have that hope and they don't have that opportunity. And they're waiting to be adopted. And you might go, okay, that's not that shocking. I'm going to put something else up on the screen. This is crazy. 102,000 kids are waiting to be adopted. There's 348,000 churches in the U.S. So if less than half of all of the churches in the United States, churches filled with hundreds and sometimes thousands of people, if each church would just adopt one kid, and just half of them did it, there'd be no orphans in the United States. Let's get closer to home. In Texas, right now, there's 13,238 children waiting to be adopted in your state. Guess how many churches we have in Texas? 27,505. What are we doing? You see, God sees all of these orphans. Do you? Do you know that in your state there's 13,000 people waiting to be adopted that don't have families? They don't have moms and dads and brothers and sisters and homes and keys to get into the home and Wi-Fi passwords and snacks and meals and pillows and beds that are theirs. They don't have to save up for insurance for their car. They don't get to save up to go to college because they don't even have a family. That's 13,238, and there's 27,000 churches, if just half of our churches in our state, each church would say, as a church, we're going to find a family. They'd be done. There'd be no orphans. And that number, that's 13,238 Sashas. You understand? Sasha just shared a testimony up here, so you've got a face to go with this word, children waiting to be adopted, orphan, right? That's what she was. Thankfully, she's not. But that's what she was, and there's 13,238 of those in your state. In your state. Do you see it? Hopefully you see it now. And you understand, based on the definition, that not only do you see the number, but you know them. You know them. You know people that are single orphans. You know people that are double orphans. And you know people that are social orphans. And God sees them. The next question I want to ask you, the next thing I observe from this passage, is that God cares for orphans. Do you? See, God doesn't just see them and go, hey, there's orphans out there. He says, leave them your grain, leave them your olives, and leave them your grapes, because I care about them and I want to provide for them. Do you care about them and want to provide for them? This is where this message is applicable for you. This is a problem. This is an issue. Children without families. What can I do about it? I'm a 15-year-old in Lake Highlands. Like, what can I do about it? I'm going to give you three ideas. If you're not writing anything down, you can take notes on your phone. You need to know these things. The first thing you can do is you can sponsor an orphan, and you can do it tonight, okay? Sponsorship. Usually it costs between $35 and $50 a month, depending on what website you go to and what country they're from, and there's a variety of factors, and that might seem like a lot, $35 to $50 a month, like $35 a month, and really, that does seem like a lot. Let me just ask you, how much do you spend each month filling up your gas tank? So if somehow you can find a way to do that, I bet there's somehow you can find a way to sponsor. Here's what sponsorship does. It provides enough meals to keep them alive and healthy, and education to give them an opportunity, and mentorship. The places that you can go to sponsor a child, it gives them those three things. Can you figure out a way to do that for $35 to $50 a month? Maybe you can't. Maybe you can't on your own. But I bet if you look down your row and you got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 other people, together you could. And you could figure it out. Cooper's joking around with me earlier. He's got a lawn mowing business. I bet he makes $35 on one lawn. And what if he and his business partner decided, you know what, every 5 lawns, we're going to take that lawn and he probably makes more than that. We're going to take that lawn and we're going to sponsor an orphan in pick the country, spin the globe, put your finger down, they're everywhere. Here's where you can go to do it. If you don't know where you can go to do it, there's two places. Mission of Hope Haiti, mohhaiti.org/orphan_sponsorships. And you can just find it by going to mohhaiti.org and you'll find it there. You go there, it's got their picture and it tells you who needs to be sponsored. You can go to compassion.com/sponsor-an-orphan, you know, whatever it is, it's on there. Go to compassion.com and search sponsor an orphan. And guys, this makes a difference. Earlier this year, our friend Jermaine, who was up on stage earlier, he went on a trip to teach a conference in the country of Uganda. And the people that hosted him, that were leading the ministry that he partnered with, there were 3 men that are leaders in the nation of Uganda. And all 3 of them who Jermaine was serving alongside and leading with, who were hosting the conference that Jermaine was at, all 3 of them were orphans who had sponsors give them $35 a month when they were children. And now they're grown men leading their country. When we go to Haiti in a few weeks, there's a group of us that's going down there. There's going to be a guy that is leading VBS. He's teaching, he's leading songs, he's dynamic, he's fun, and he loves those children. He's 20 years old. He goes to college now in the United States, in Oklahoma, in Bethany, Oklahoma, and his name is John Mark. John Mark was an orphan. He's 20 years old. He's still an orphan, even though he's aged out of our definition, and he's still being sponsored by North Americans through Mission of Hope Haiti. Those are just 2 examples of the incredible fruit that is born through sponsorship. The second thing you can do is friendship. Everybody knew somebody that fits this definition of an orphan, and something that you can do right now is just be mindful of their needs and be a good friend. Don't try to be their savior or anything like that. But my wife had somebody in her small group that was a single orphan that had a parent that died, and she encouraged some of her best friends that were also in the small group. She used the phrase, share your family. Share your family. Like, do you realize that this friend of yours never gets a chance to be in a room with a dad that cares about her? And your family loves God and they love your friend. Let your family care for her. So when you go on vacation, talk to your family and invite your friend to go with you so they can have a whole week of seeing what it's like to be around a mom and a dad. And how do they have a marriage? How do they parent? Because she's only seen one thing. And so that's a great thing that anybody can do, and it's free, is you can share your family. You can invite a friend over for dinner. You can invite a friend on a road trip. You can invite a friend on a vacation. And your friendship can have an impact. And you can do it prayerfully, not as a project, but as somebody that just loves and cares for others and wants to give them an opportunity. We still have that person come over to our house every couple months just to spend a day with our family, to see husband and wife parenting, to watch us discipline our kids, to watch us put our kids to bed, to go through that routine, because she's never seen it. And she wants to learn. And so we're sharing our family. You can do that too. And the third thing you can do is this: adoption. Wait, what? I'm in high school. I can't adopt anybody. Maybe you can't, but maybe your parents can. Maybe your aunt and uncle can. Maybe when you're older, you can. I want to tell you a story. I used to work at a camp called Kanakuk. It's the younger brother to Pine Cove, which is the better of the two. shots fired? No, I like Kanakuk. It's great. I used to work there. Like I said, I was working at K1, and we were waiting for a chapel to start. I'm a counselor at a camp, and I was just visiting with the kids sitting around me, and there were some girls in the row behind me and a couple other guys turned around, and we were just getting to know them. And this one girl started sharing her story. And I learned more of her story as the weeks went on. I was interested because this little girl was a junior higher. Her name was Emily. And after returning from Haiti and having her eyes opened to the orphan crisis that existed there, she began to learn about the 140 million other orphans around the world. And she began praying and then asking her parents for a little sister from another country. And she believed in her heart that it was God's will for her parents to adopt, but her parents said no. And so she kept praying and she kept asking. She started writing letters and leaving her letters on her parents' nightstand, telling them why she thought it was God's will for their family to adopt. Keep in mind, this is a junior high girl, but she understood this: sponsorship, great, friendship, great, but adoption is something that she could do, that her family could do to make an impact on orphans. She bought a book and read it as a junior higher about international adoption. And she continued to pray. But after a year and a half, she was frustrated. So her parents continued to say no. But you know what she did? Emily kept praying. And after several years, finally, God convinced her parents together. And they made a decision. And they brought Emily home, a little sister from China. But it didn't stop there. They brought two more home after that. They ended up adopting three little girls from China. And they were so inspired by that experience, they started an entire organization to help raise funds to support other people who were willing to care for orphans through adoption. And I want to show you a quick video from the organization that started from Emily, a junior high girl's prayer. Watch this 2-minute video about Show Hope.
Children should have a family.
That's just how it's supposed to be.
But millions don't.
There are a lot of things that get in the way of children having a family.
The need is really big.
It's easy to forget how many children need help.
You have to remember.
And then you have to do something.
Sometimes all it takes is one spark.
Show Hope spark came when a young girl named Emily went to Haiti and she saw a great need.
She knew she had to do something, so she convinced her mom and dad to help.
Mary Beth and Stephen Curtis Chapman started something to try and change the world for orphans.
Because every child needs to know the love and protection of family.
Every child!
So here's where you enter the story.
You can help a child have a loving family.
because adoption can be really expensive, and that gets in the way.
Show Up turns your donations into adoption aid grants that helps children come home.
Some kids need medical care before they can join their family.
So, Show Hope has care centers in China, like Maria's Big House of Hope.
Every day they provide medical care for hundreds of children.
Show Hope is giving students the chance to make a difference through their Student Initiative Program.
And Show Hope even equips families to help their children thrive through pre- and post-adoption support.
But here's what really matters.
Every child needs a family.
And nothing should stand in the way of that.
Nothing.
No one can do it all.
But everyone can do something.
Do something!
Do something.
So let's do something. Let's show hope.
It's like that's a pretty cool thing to see. And I want to remind you that that came and was born from the prayers of a junior high girl. And now hundreds of people are adopting and able to adopt kids because of her vision. Could God use you in a similar way? So now as I look back at this passage, there's one more thing that I observe. You see, God sees orphans, and I think it's challenging for us to ask ourselves the question, do I? God cares for orphans, and we should challenge ourselves to ask, do I? But the last thing I want to key in on is what he says twice in there, at the beginning and the end, about remembering that you were once slaves and that God had brought them out. And I want to just end on reflecting on the why. Why should you care for orphans? Why should you see orphans? Don't you have enough already going on in your life? And the reason why is because God had taken them out of slavery and brought them into his family. And God was their father. And if God is your father, you got to ask yourself the question, who is my family? Because you care about your family. But what if those 140 million orphans were your brothers and sisters? What would you do for and about that? Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 through 7 says this. When the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent him to buy freedom for us. For us. This is in the New Testament. This isn't the nation of Israel. This is you and me. For us who were slaves, not to Egypt, but to the law. Here's what that means, slaves to the law. That means you were a sinner. And the law says the wages of your sin was death. And you were chained to that. And there was nothing you could do to free yourself from the consequence and the penalty of your sin, the eternal separation from God, and the destiny of hell, which you were on a one-way track towards. You were slaves to that. But Jesus was sent to buy our freedom so that he could adopt us as his very own children. And because we are his children, God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Abba, Father. Now we're in a new family. Now you're no longer a slave, but you are God's own child. And since you're his child, God has made you his heir. I want to explain to you what this means. Since you're his child, God has made you his heir. Because Paul is talking to an ancient Roman culture. And most of the time, their adoptions didn't happen through Show Hope. They weren't these little children that had been abandoned by their parents in an orphanage. Most of the time in Roman culture, if you've drifted away, pay attention because I need you to hear this, because I need you to understand something about yourself so you can understand what we're talking about tonight. Most of the time in Roman culture, legal adoption happened with adults. With adults. Adults would get adopted. People age 17, 18, 19, 20 would get adopted. Let me explain. In the ancient Roman culture, the motivation for legal adoption was not to care for a needy child. It was to preserve a family's lineage and legacy and property and wealth. If a Roman household was unable to conceive a son, or if the sons had died or rebelled, a faithful slave from that household was chosen to be adopted as a son, someone that they knew, that they saw potential in. They adopted them as their son. And in this type of adoption, the adoptee got a new identity. His old obligations and debts and everything about his life as a slave was wiped out, and a whole new identity as a son was assumed immediately, not when the father died, not when the older generation died, but immediately in Roman culture. Here's what happened. Essentially, the adoptee became the same person as the adopter, and by Roman law, held the family property and wealth jointly with their new father and new family. So all children of any age, natural or adopted, were heirs in this culture while the father, while the parents were still living and they had joint control of the property. And guys, when Paul is talking to the Galatians about this, he's talking to us about this. And this is how they're hearing it. They're understanding what God has done is he has invited us in to share with everything he has and everything he is and made us one with him. And because he's done that, he calls us to do that for others. So guys, if we would all wrestle with these three questions, God sees orphans, do I? God cares for orphans, do I? And if God is my father, if I've been adopted into his family, if he shared everything he has with me, who's my family? And how should I share and care for them? If we wrestled with that, we'd be more of what God has intended his church to be. So I told you about Carla Squidieri and her ring, but I didn't tell you the whole story. I didn't tell you the whole story. Remember, Bernie called the trash company. They said there's nothing they can do. It's in line for the incinerator. It is radioactive. But Bernie said, I cannot accept that. And up there in Missouri, whatever this small town is, he called the mayor. And the mayor called the dump. And the mayor said, reroute that truck out of the radioactive area. Take it out. Don't dump it in the incinerator and take it to another location. I'm going to let these people, these crazy people, dig through all this trash themselves. And so Bernie and Carla arrived with white hazmat suits, helmets, gloves, and boots, not knowing what to expect. They said they looked like Ghostbusters in the suit. The garbage company laughed at them. But Bernie said they were initially optimistic. Spoiler alert with the picture. Sorry about that. They were initially optimistic, but they began to feel helpless when the trash was unloaded and piled up. They realized that the trash truck had made 900 stops. 900 stops. It was a compactor truck. And so Bernie said it was like looking for a needle in a needle stack. And the only identifier was that the bag was white with a black drawstring. But after 20 minutes, Joe Evan, one of the employees at the dump, yelled, I found it. And they came running over. Carla started crying, and they were all stunned that Evan was able to find the rings. The garbage company told them that it was the first time in 30 years that anyone had been able to find any lost item at the dump. So why do I tell you the rest of the story? Because that story is our story. That story was our story. We have not lived our lives holy and set apart. And we have been washed away into the trash. Guys, each of us have lived parts of our lives that compared to God's holiness and perfection have been like trash. But God doesn't treat us as trash, and he hasn't treated you as trash. God has seen the value in you, and he has come after you, and he has called you, and he has chased you, and he has sought you out until he has found you, and he has reclaimed you as his own and adopted you back into his family. God has treated you and said, no, they've gone their own way. They've fallen, they're broken, but I can't accept that. I'm going to send my son, and I'm going to find them, and I'm going to bring them back. That's how God's treated you. God has set you apart. He's found you. He's adopted you and treated you like a son, not a slave anymore. Not a slave to your own selfishness and consequences of your sin. That's what that means. And God has also set orphans apart. We see it in Deuteronomy 24. He sees them and he cares about them. And he wants us to work with him to go to great lengths, just like Bernie and Carla did to find their rings, to demonstrate their great worth to him, because they are also his children. So we're going to stand and sing, I'm no longer a slave. I'm a child of God. And I want you to think about all those orphans out there. And then we'll get out of here. So you guys stand up and let's sing.